ready. Okay. Would you care to reserve any time for rebuttal?
I would. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes.
Yes, sir.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'm Charles Lustig on behalf of the appellant Mark Merja in this case. I'm here today to request that the Court find that there was insufficient evidence as a matter of law to convict him of violating Virginia's Computer Solicitation Statute 18.2-374-3C and D. It's our contention that there was not enough evidence, even given the deferential standard that this Court applies when reviewing the sufficiency of evidence, to convict him of the offense for which he was charged. And the main reason that the evidence was insufficient is because there was simply no evidence that he attempted to induce, entreat, or propose that the victim commit any of the specific sexual acts that are enumerated in subsection C1 through C4 of the statute.
Can I ask you on that, Mr. Lustig? I mean, he does tell her he wishes we could chill right now after sending what he later admits to the police officers or racist text. And he talks about he wants to, quote, stretch your tight-ass legs out and loosen them hips up, too. So, and he concedes it's racy. That was before we even get to the dream text, I believe. So, why can't a rational fact finder conclude or infer from this that there was an intent to slowly entice her activity?
Judge Beals, I have 2 points to respond to that. First of all, those two statements do take the ball closer to the line of solicitation, but I don't think they cross the line because the statute is very specific. You have to propose oral sex, intercourse, and I don't think either of those two statements can be inferred to propose that the victim do that. More importantly, and this is one of the central tenets of my argument today, even if that gets the Commonwealth over the goal line with respect to specific intent, I don't think it gets them over the goal line with respect to the actus reus of the crime. And I was thinking about this, and for some reason I thought about my first year law school class in criminal law, and a lot of the focus in the briefs and in the court's ruling below was whether there was an intent to solicit the victim in this case. And I think that's a much closer call. And perhaps given the deferential review that this court engages in, it's easier for the court to conclude that there was an intent. But I don't think that solves the problem of the actus reus under the statute. And I think it's really important that you look at the language of 374.3 subsection C1-4. And it requires that not only that they prove lascivious intent, which I think Judge Beals is talking about, but beyond that, they also have to prove as an element of the offense that he solicited the victim for the purpose of committing knowingly and intentionally any of 4 acts. And each of these 4 acts has a very specific and concrete transitive verb. He has to propose that she expose her genital parts or his. Propose in subsection 2. In subsection 3, propose.
Well, in subsection 2? Propose that any such child feel or fondle his own, or that propose that such person feel or fondle the sexual or genital parts of any such child. Don't we have case law that says the buttocks can be a sexual part for feeling and fondling? And he's talking about stretching out her.
I'm not familiar with that. Your Honor could be correct. I'm not familiar with that body of law, but I don't see anything that he said in either the text messages that you referred or in the dream that he related where he proposed that she touch his buttocks or that he touch her buttocks. I can't.
Stretching, stretch out, I forget the exact words, but I think I just said it. Let's see. Stretch your tight-ass legs out and loosen them hips up, too.
Again, talks about her legs and her hip, does not talk about her buttocks. So I think even the
buttocks aren't the same thing. Yeah.
I don't think they are. I think they're separate parts of the body. And the statute is very specific about what the Commonwealth has to prove. And I just don't believe that there's sufficient evidence that he proposed that this victim in this case engage in any of those 4 acts. So
Your summary is basically that even with solicitation, which is pretty much to be a mental paper, there's still an intent element and an act element.
There is.
So you can have intent. intent, but until you do something, some form of solicitation, you don't have the criminal act.
I think that's right, and I think one of the things we have to be concerned about with an inchoate offense like this is that you are criminalizing something that's closer to thought than to action, and there still has to be conduct that constitutes solicitation. And the way I was thinking about this when I was preparing my oral argument today, there's a continuum of conduct that either does or doesn't constitute solicitation. And you have the Ford case where somebody goes up to two college girls and says he wants to have oral sex with them. We don't even have that in this case. He never even got up to what I think is the far end of the continuum. And the Ford case holds expressly that words alone are not enough to constitute solicitation.
In that case, he didn't know those girls from Adam.
He did not. He did not. But and that is one way to distinguish that case. But I would argue in this case that my client did not even go that far. He didn't even say he wanted to have oral sex with this young woman. Now, nobody can just dispute the fact that these are reprehensible texts, but he never even got to expressing his desire. And I think the Ford case holds that.
But you don't think you can infer, particularly from the dream text, and that comes after he's saying he wants to stretch out her legs and he uses and the hips too, that a rational fact finder, Judge Arrington, couldn't infer from that he's trying to set this up?
Well,
I
think
he's going to see her again, and he's going to be stretching her eyes, presumably.
And you have to look at that in the context. But I know that inferences are drawn in favor of the fact finder when we're dealing with a guilty verdict. But I don't think that may get you beyond, that may meet the element of lascivious intent. But I don't believe that gets you to the element of incitement, which is the gravamen of a solicitation offense. And getting back to my continuum analogy, I think on one end of the continuum you have somebody like the defendant in Ford expressing his desire to have sex with the victim. Then you have most of the cases that I've cited in my brief and that the Commonwealth has cited in their brief, Ford, Brooker, Nixon, Bloom, which are the published opinions I've cited, and then the Toghill and Jeffers unpublished opinions, and even the cases cited by the Commonwealth, Branch and Peterson. In all of those cases, the defendant actually proposed having sex with the victim in that case, and in many cases did much worse than that. Sent pictures of his penis, masturbated to ejaculation.
Those cases didn't say you had to send pictures like that. That's not the floor. That's not the ceiling.
No, it's not. But again, in my continuum, I think you have expressing a desire, which Ford says is not enough, proposing that you have sex, sending pictures, and then you have the cases like Peterson, which came out of Richmond, where the people are actually in a car and they drive off somewhere and they talk about having oral sex together. Two men talk about having oral sex together. So I think in that continuum, you have in this case somebody who sends a very inappropriate text message but never crosses that line and proposes that the victim engage in any of those acts. So I think that if, as far as I'm aware, there's not a single case from this court or the Supreme Court of Virginia which has ever held that you can convict somebody of solicitation without at least proposing that you have sex. And he didn't even do that in this case. So I think it would be an impermissible enlargement of the crime of solicitation to extend it to the facts of this case, where he did something we can all agree was egregious, but he never proposed that the victim commit any of those four acts that are enumerated in the statute. The other thing I'd like to point out is the Commonwealth conceded in their own brief on page 8 that Mr. Mergen never made, quote, an overt attempt to commit a crime. And they focus almost exclusively in their brief on the specific intent element of this offense. And I would like the court to analyze whether or not there was sufficient proof of the conduct that is required by the statute to convict somebody of solicitation. And then the final thing I'll say before reserving my time for rebuttal is the Peterson case, which is heavily relied on by the Commonwealth. The court affirmed a solicitation conviction in that case, even though the relationship, in their words, never got beyond the discussion stage. But there was overt discussion in the Peterson case about having sex, about having sodomy. So there's a clear distinction between that case and this case. In this case, as awful as that text message was, it never even got to the discussion stage, much less past the discussion stage. Now, he may have gotten there eventually.
Why can't a rational fact finder conclude that when a coach, an adult male, sends a 16-year-old girl he's been working with for months on her conditioning to help her with her high jump, and he then says, you know, you make... I'm just messing with you. I just like working with your sexy self. Sorry if I'm blunt, just keeping it real. He sends her the text that I just quoted to you. And then he sends the dream text of all his fantasy of having sex with her, sexual intercourse with her. Why can't Judge Arrington say, I think he's crossed the line of proposing something here? He may not have said, when can we do this, or where can we meet, or what time, but he is setting her up, since he's going to see her again soon as her coach, to arrange something. And the fact that they don't ever, that doesn't happen, because apparently after that text is sent, things get cut off.
Well, I would say 2 points in response to that. First, grooming is not a crime. You have to actually prove that there was solicitation. And again, I don't think he even expressed his desire to have sex with this young woman. He may have. That may have been his next step. But I think that you can't criminalize it before you get to that stage. And the Ford case is pretty clear on that, that you have to do more than express your own desire to have sex with the victim. And I don't think he did that in this case. He may have gotten there eventually, but he didn't do it. So I would argue that it just didn't get that far in terms of the conduct of solicitation. I don't believe it was rational for the judge to find that the Commonwealth met the conduct element of the statute. And I'll reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Just a quick question. What if at the end of recounting the dream he had, he said, I wish it were a reality? Would that be enough?
That'd be a closer call, Your Honor. That'd be a closer call. But I don't think he got to that point. And I think it's also telling, although I don't think it's necessarily dispositive, the victim in this case didn't think anything of the text message that he sent. I don't think that helps me too much, because
she never responded. He was like, silence. You think coaches are free, huh? Crickets.
Well, but she testified in court that she didn't think too much of the text. I forget what page of the appendix is. I can find that and give it to Your Honor in rebuttal. But she specifically said that. Now, unfortunately, I don't think that gets me very far, because the case law on solicitation shows you don't have to complete the act. But I think it does show that how far we are from the impermissible line that establishes what is solicitation and what is merely expressing sexual desire. Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Lauren Campbell on behalf of the Commonwealth. The trial court properly convicted the defendant under Code 18.2 374.3d, because as the defendant argues, this case is about words, but it's not just words. It's also the context of those words and the conduct of the defendant in this case. And the evidence at trial showed...
The conduct of the words?
The conduct of the defendant throughout the relationship. Because if you look at the context and the conduct of the defendant in using those words, he was escalating his behavior over this period. And the evidence at trial showed that the defendant used a cell phone to ultimately send a very sexually explicit text message to this minor victim. However, he also had an influential relationship with her as her coach. He'd been having an extended electronic communication with her in which he repeatedly escalated his behavior and she repeatedly rebuffed him. And ultimately, he led him to send this dream text message. And to be guilty of criminal solicitation, an accused only needs to attempt to incite another to commit
it. Let me ask you about that. The attempt to solicit. I know that language appears in cases, but are you saying that proof of what would be a classic attempt as applied to the crime of solicitation would be sufficient? Not that you have to prove solicitation, which would be an intent element and an act element, but that you can be sufficient under this statute if you only rise to an attempt to solicit.
Your Honor, I believe the attempt is just in that he did not successfully incite her, obviously because she did not respond to this text message or engage in any of the...
Attempt in the sense like incite, that term, but not in the word of art, like an attempted murder.
Yes, Your
different,
Honor. Yes,
and much less of a crime than murder.
Yes, Your Honor.
And so an attempt solicit, in that sense, is not what... Okay.
Not an attempt to solicit,
okay.
An attempt to incite.
Or incite.
Yes, Your Honor. And the case law is clear where the conduct of the accused under the circumstances involves, you look at all the conduct to infer his intent to commit the element established. And it can be words alone if there's the contact and the context. In Ford, the context of that was strangers. Similar to, as Judge Beals, you noted, they had a relationship. She was going to see him again. A lot of these cases where you see a direct proposal, let's meet here, let's do this, they've never met before, they don't know, have never seen each other in person, and they have no future plans to meet. However, he was her coach. It's very likely that they were going to see each other in the future, but for her radio silence after she received that message. And the defendant knew that when he sent this text message. The relationship here is very clear. It's reasonable to infer from his actions and words, this lengthy course of conduct, their coach and student relationship, his repetitive sexual advances, where he says things such as he's getting his sip on and wants to hang out with her, and she responds, oh yeah, we can talk about track and me jumping a certain height. It's very clear that her focus was jumping this height, and he repeatedly reaches out to her with sexual overtones, and culminating with this graphic text message.
Does it matter? I mean, the trial judge seemed to make a factual finding that it was not clear whether that most graphic text message about the dream happened before he or after he proposed, you know, how he was going to stretch out her legs and her hips. Does that make a difference which order it would come in?
I don't believe it would make a difference which order it would come in. I don't think the trial court made a specific finding on that. I think the trial court did say, you know, I'm not totally sure. I might have to look at the exact reading, but I'm not totally sure how this happened. But I believe the trial court did ultimately believe that it ended with this. The evidence, it would infer that it ended with that dream text message because the victim stopped responding after that one, and she's responding in the other text messages. So I think the inference is that that was the final text message.
Can I ask you also... looking at the statute,
yes.
And this is under Part B, mm-hmm. It refers to Part C, and it lists the four things, you know, that would allow it to,
yes, Your Honor.
Qualify under Part C as a violation of it.
Mm-hmm.
What Mr. Lustig said, you know, that hips and buttocks are not really the same body part. How do you respond, and how does it fit under the wording of the statute?
Absolutely, Your Honor. I think it's important to note that while the defendant couched this as a dream, that when he said, I had a dream before I fell asleep about you, I think the reasonable inference from that is that that was not a dream, but it in fact was a fantasy he was playing out in order to incite her and get a reaction out of her. And I think based on that specific circumstances and this specific facts of this case, that he wasn't reciting a dream he had, but he was in fact proposing a number of sexual activities with the victim, which included oral sex and intercourse. And I think it's very clear without reading what actually he said to her in that text message that it's very clear what he was proposing.
Didn't you propose something in the past tense?
I think in this case, Your Honor, it was because he was... based on his relationship with her and how he kept trying to get reactions out of her, to start a sexual relationship with her, when he sent this, he was very much trying to get a response out of her, which is why he then responds, crickets, oh, you must think Coach is a freak now, because he was trying to get some sort of reaction out of her, and I think that's clear based on both what he said in that text message and in his responses afterwards, after she doesn't respond to him, that he was expecting to incite her in order to commit those acts. I don't think just because he specifically, just because the defendant couched it in a certain way, in this case, based on the reasonable inferences that the trial court could find that he was still proposing to do these actions with her based on their relationship and the fact that they were going to see each other again. He was very influential, obviously, in her life. And
couldn't you say the same thing? Were you saying this kind of fantasy is in fact a proposal? Couldn't you say that exactly about the words used in Ford, where the guy said what he wanted to do?
Certainly,
and that came up with a different result.
Certainly, Your Honor. But Ford is very much a very different case from this. That was a defendant going up to a stranger. He said, he expressed what this court determined was a mere desire in that case. It was an encounter that was very brief in time. There was two women in that case.
But if that statement couched as a fantasy, wouldn't that argument have made Ford come up with a different result?
Because Ford only has the one statement. There's no additional context within which to place that statement. And we have additional context in this case, which is what makes it different. There was also two women in that case, neither of which even knew who that statement was directed at. We don't have that in this case. We know who the victim is. We know about their relationship. And the defendant mentioned that clearly he didn't incite her because she didn't even attempt to turn this over. I think that her reluctance to turn over the text message and her reluctance to testify demonstrates the importance of this electronic communication statute to protect minors from this predatory behavior. And the defendant was using his influential relationship to essentially groom her and ultimately to incite her to engage in a sexual act with him. And taking all reasonable inferences in the light most favorable of the Commonwealth, when the trial court found that, based on the totality of the circumstances, the graphic nature of the text messages, the relationship between the parties, that she was a 16-year-old victim and he was her track coach, the court could infer that his conduct violated the statute. And if the court has no further questions, the Commonwealth would ask that you affirm the conviction.
One other question.
Yes, Your Honor.
Mr. Lustig was talking about that really there was no specific actus reus here. Like even if there's a mens rea, there's no actual proposal. Mm-hmm. Can you elaborate on your response to that a little more?
I think that this is a case where you can't look at words in a vacuum, and that those words that he said in that text message were the actus reus of the proposal. Thank you, Your Honors. The Commonwealth would ask that you affirm the conviction.
Thank you. Mr. Lustig. And if you need it, we'll make sure you have your 3 minutes.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor. It only says 2 minutes. Do I have an extra minute? Or?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I'll try to be brief. I just had a couple of points I wanted to make quickly. Ms. Campbell said that the conduct repeatedly escalated, and that's actually not true. It did escalate towards the end, but they conceded in their brief on page 2 that there was a normal relationship between them between October 2014 and March of 2015.
None of this happened until March of 2015. Right?
That's correct.
It's over how long? It's not over a very long period.
It was a couple week period, I believe, in March of that year. The second thing I'd like to say is that I'd encourage the court to look at the victim's testimony on cross-examination about the various things that did not happen. He never proposed that they meet. He never took any steps after that last graphic sexual message to pursue her. And there are four or five things that are mentioned in there that I think are quite helpful. See if I can find the quote real quick. So on page 26, 27, and 29 of the brief, when they were together, and they were together a lot, Mergen never acted inappropriately, never touched her or said anything inappropriate. After the last text message, she had no contact with him. He never asked to meet with him. He never invited her to his home or any place where she could be alone with him, and he never touched her in an appropriate fashion. And all of those facts distinguish this case from every case that's cited in both my brief and in the Commonwealth's brief. There was significantly more conduct in just about every case that I've ever seen from this court and the Supreme Court of Virginia. Also, I'd encourage the court to look at the language in Ford. There are two quotes that I thought were really important. Yes, you don't have to have an overt act and you don't have to complete the offense, but the court says, quote, the conduct constituting the act of solicitation must be done with the intent to induce another to act. So we have to have that conduct here, and we don't have that.
In his answer, there are three statements between him and the girls. The second was kind of a mumbling on his part, and so his wife says, what do you want? And the third, then he says the very graphic thing. He says to her, why isn't that simply, and he didn't know them at all, he's not even right up next to the car, he's at some distance from their car, why isn't that just being really crude and rude and maybe a violation of some sort of ordinance about vulgarity or whatever, but not really a serious proposal because it's just one sentence that's obnoxious?
Well, I think Your Honor is correct that case is different than this case because of the relationship. But I would also argue that case is different than this case because in this case, my client never even went that far. He never even said, I want to have oral sex with you or I want to have sex with you. He related in past tense a dream that he had had. So I think that it cuts both ways on Ford. The other quote that I wanted to mention from Ford was Ford's statements, and this is the main reason the court reversed, Ford's statements were no more than the expression of his own desire, did not constitute a command, entreaty, or attempt to persuade the victim to engage in oral sodomy. Those are exactly the facts of this case. We have no more, I think even being charitable, we have no more than Mr. Merge expressing his desire to have sex with this young lady, but he never went beyond that to command, entreat, or attempt to persuade her to commit any of those acts. And I think that's the fatal flaw in the evidence in this case. And finally, this, you were talking about the Ford case, maybe another could be another crime. I think you could say that in this case, too. And even trial counsel admitted this might have been some other crime, but it wasn't solicitation. And the main reason it wasn't solicitation is you do not have the conduct of that the statute requires. You didn't have a proposal. You didn't have an incitement. You didn't have a suggestion. It was reprehensible, but it did not constitute sufficient conduct to violate the solicitation statute. And I think this would be sui generis case if the court found that the evidence was sufficient for solicitation when all the other cases have so much more conduct that crosses the line. And if the court doesn't have any more questions.
Thank you very much.